CliffCentral.com.
Yes, sirree. You don't want to miss the Cliff Central Sport MKT show, 12 to 2 o'clock on Monday to Friday. And there's loads of good stuff there. In fact, now it is in HD. Bulelo tipped me off yesterday, and I went and followed the link, and then I've got, you know, one of those TVs. It's, even though it's 11 or 12 years old, it is able to be connected to my phone, you know, wirelessly. I think a lot of people have this, but for me, it's amazing that my 12-year-old TV can still do this. And I watched it in HD, and it's absolutely amazing. So check out Cliff Central Sport. Really, really cool. And you have to do it on a big screen because the definition is just insane. It's fantastic, the quality of all of this. It's going to be a world-class experience for you, so make sure you join in the MKT show. And while we're promoting stuff, the T-Health show, which you heard about in the middle of that break, is a really interesting show too. They've got these two really well-informed guys, and they are talking about all kinds of aspects of not just male health, but health in general. It's worth giving them a listen, and they are on today at 9 o'clock on cliffcentral.com. So don't miss the T-Health show today as well while we're talking about this stuff. Soon we'll be joined by Robin Wheeler, who's done a book tour of South Africa. He says it's made him really optimistic about what South Africa could be and where we're headed. And he has some positive messages to share with us. We need all the positive messages we can get. I just want to quickly, before we get into anything else, refer to a friend of mine sent me this. This is from a teacher. Her daughter is at school. Teacher sent this, and her reply is just the best thing I've ever seen. So take a look at this message first. If you're a parent or you're not, you'll love this. So first of all, this is from the teacher. Good morning. As you know, at school we try our best to promote healthy eating. During snack time, we only allow healthy food items to be brought to school. I see that today Ursula only has a big piece of rainbow cake for her snack. Please ensure that only healthy items are sent. Thank you, the teacher. So she's not being mean, but, you know, she's trying to make sure that the kids get healthy snacks, and that's probably school policy. Anyway, the mom's reply is my favorite thing. So here's the reply. This is my friend. She goes, "Hi, Teacher Sam. I appreciate your deep care for the kids and their health. Rest assured that Ursula gets healthy snacks 90% of the time. But I'm also a believer that sometimes we could all just do with a big piece of rainbow cake, because life is unbearably short, and also, I didn't have bread this morning." Isn't that awesome? Isn't that great?
Oh, that's very lovely. Funny. That's dope. That's very cool.
That's really cool. All right. So embarrassingly, we went through the fact that I couldn't figure out how to do a swipe up on IG, on Instagram. And luckily, Simpiwe was at hand to help me. But it is amazing. Like, Lebang, you were talking to me this morning. You said waking up is much easier for a woman, because even if you didn't get enough sleep, you could put on some makeup and you'll look good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the way you look this morning. But Bulelo and I aren't. First of all, I don't have any makeup.
For you guys.
There's nothing we can do, right? And that got us onto like the topic of plastic surgery and Botox and how many people are doing that these days. Would you accept, and this is your question, not mine, but would you accept plastic surgery as a birthday gift? I mean, I know guys who've given wives and girlfriends breast augmentations as birthday presents. Now,
that's a gift for him. That's a gift for him. Excellent.
But I've always, my rule has been clear on this from the get-go. It is not up to the guy to decide whether to accept that gift or not. And in fact, even offering it could be considered rude. You have to make sure it's something that your girlfriend or wife or whoever wants. And if they do want it,
yes,
sure, pay for it. Now, you'd say, you I saw you saying, bring it on.
Hell yeah, I'm down for it. In fact, my boyfriend already knows that once we're done having all the babies that we want to have, we're going straight for the breast, you know, in what's it called? The increase, you know, I'm trying to CD it up. Yeah. Yes. And also, I think I grew up being very exposed to it. Like, my mom had some work done on her breast when I was still like 10, like maybe like 1990, okay. You know, very, very, very long ago. And I was like, okay, cool. This is a vibe. And then when I was like 15, she did like her ears. And then when I was like 17, I was like, this woman is inside. Yeah, she's been about that life. Huh. Of which my dad always hated, because he still brings it up till this day. Like, in 1991, I paid 80,000 rand for your mom to do. Like, dad, get over it. But I'm down for it. I think it's cool. I would accept it. It's always my idea. Like, my man knows. I'm like, babe, this face looks cool, you know, like right. the cheeks are, you know, they're going, when I'm 60, I also want to go, So sure. I'm definitely down for it.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, if you are the kind of woman who can go and do this, whether or not you have a husband or boyfriend or anyone else paying for it, then that's great too.
Yeah.
But I yeah. think it's so cool that your mom was doing this in the 90s. She's obviously was ahead of her time. And you know, I think it's great. If anything adds or increases your confidence, why the hell not?
Yes.
No problem with
exactly. it. Exactly. It's enhancing what's already there. You know, it's not to make this huge shift on, you know, you hate how you look, so you want to look completely different. If you already, like, love how you look, then I'm all for the make it look better. Obviously, some people just want to change everything about them. But my mom went about it in a way of, like, okay, I'm already cool. Let me just look cooler or feel better. So that's kind of what I took from her. I didn't take it as like I feel like I suck. So let me, you know. So I'm down for it. I'm all for it. If it's going to boost your confidence, if it's going to do something good for you, then why the heck not?
Yeah. And also, obviously, it might not be to improve your look. You might be very happy with your looks. You just might want to make them last longer. But good.
And then there's that. Then there's that. And I think, guys, you should try it. Like a little bit of Botox. I mean, you were complaining about your age earlier. You know, I think you could still, you know, pull it off. Just a little bit of an injection here and there. I mean, you got it.
Mm. So I go to. We're going to talk to the woman who does these skin treatments of mine. Not because I want to give her free promotion, but I think she's really, really interesting to talk to about it. And she goes to all these international conferences and figures out how to, you know, bring in the right machines and what kinds of treatments are really working all over the world. So she's, you know, she's properly qualified, first of all. And second of all, she takes an enormous interest in being at the cutting edge of, you know, chemical skin peels and vampire facials and all of that sort of stuff, which is what she's done. And she said to me the other day, she's looking at me, she's like, we need to do something with these eyelids eventually. She's not a surgeon, so she's not going to – I'd have to actually go for surgery. And I was like, I don't know about that. You see, I don't want to do things that are going to change my expression. That to me – because I have a pretty expressive face. I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons I suppose they put me on Idols. But it's there's nothing worse than those people who have no expression because they've been pulled stiff. And also they start looking a bit weird because you can't predict how someone's face is going to change with age. And if one side just starts going like this and the other side like that, it's not a good thing. And you don't really know which muscles are tightened up and which ones are loosened. You can end up looking like a scarecrow.
That's true. But there are some people that are embracing, like, extreme plastic surgery. Like, even if it's, like, having these major lips. I know there's a lot of, like, Russian influencers that are into that vibe. Huge, extreme, kind of clown-looking vibe. But that's their swag. Like, that's what they are known for, and they're cool with it. Like, so I think with the world changing and evolving, we're just going to end up just having to put a thumbs up to everybody's choices. And like, if you want to look like that, good for you, Carla Minta.
Well, Daniela says it's called the Wonder Woman makeover. After kids, you lift, snip, and tighten all the bits that are necessary. I'm all for it. It makes you feel good. Go for it. Nice.
Thank you, Daniela.
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting that guys were saying what you're saying. Is for me, it's always been such a turnoff when anybody does anything to their body. Like for me, as soon as I hear fake breasts, fake anything, I'm out. I'm like, do it naturally, and I love natural, and as you age, let it be. Like, I'm all into it. And if you're going to tighten it up, get in the gym,
sure,
or just let it be. It's a huge turnoff for me when people have snipped anything, like a massive, like almost non-starter. But again, that's okay if it's your thing, you know?
Do you think you'd be able to tell the difference, like, if somebody's done their boobs and, like...
Absolutely.
You know,
I can
really?
Tell. Yeah. For goodness sake. Yeah. I can tell fakey straight away.
Yeah, you know, it also depends. Like, there are really good surgeons and really good people in this profession, and then there are people who are just complete clowns. And the clowns, they may be cheaper, but you pay the price, trust me. In the long term, the price is paid.
But for me, I see you've gone straight to the aesthetic. For me, it's not about that because I'm actually about, if you want to alter yourself, what am I in for in the insecurity game? You know, I always think about, I'm very pragmatic in life, is if you're altering stuff, what else am I in for that you're not happy about? How far's that rabbit hole?
But this is assuming, Bulelo, that everybody has equal amounts of confidence and that there is some perfect aim, some goal that we can all aim for. I don't think that those people exist. Like, everyone's got... I know the most beautiful girl you've ever seen in your life. She's just magnificent. Even... like well into her 40s, she still looks better than any 20-year-old I've met. And she has huge insecurities around the way she looks.
Absolutely.
And there are
Look at that face. Not everybody was lucky enough to be born with that fantastic face. Like, you know, some of us may just want to, you know, do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And it may not even be an insecurity thing. As I said, it's enhancing. It's not...
No,
you know.
But hold on. I have no problem with it. I'm not saying I have a problem with people doing it.
Yeah.
I'm saying for me, if you were in my inner circle, I'd love for you to just accept what you got and let's roll with it. And I'd love to love that until the end. And but I have not. If you're doing it, you do your thing. I'm just saying for me.
What other people do with their body is none of your business. It's none of your...
when they are not in my circle.
Sure,
whoa.
But even if they're in your
if
circle,
you're my partner, it is my business.
If they're your partner, you should be discussing all kinds of things that aren't everybody else's business. But generally, as an independent, sovereign individual on Earth, what you do with your body, what you have someone do to the outside of it to make it more attractive or less attractive, what you tattoo on yourself, piercings, what drugs you take, who you have sex with, none of that is anyone else's business. You do what you want with your meat. You own your meat.
Having said that.
And by the way, the obvious logical conclusion to this is you can end it all when you feel like it as well. I have no problem with people who go, all right, I've had a good enough time, now it's finished. That's true autonomy.
You see, I've got, you know, this is where we always take a divergence with the absolute permissiveness. I do like lines, is you can't do absolutely what you want because there are people who get to see you and children and you're a teacher and now, I don't know, you're conducting yourself in whatever way just because you feel like you can do it. I don't like how far that's going now.
Shouldn't I do that so that I can encourage you, person looking at me, to also want to do you? Surely. Like, of course, read the room. Let me not be out here, like, being wild. But as a form of self-expression, my life is an example. And it should, you know, encourage you to also want to do you so that you can feel better about yourself. Versus me, like, just sort of, society says, let me be robotic. So, no. Like, we don't live in that time anymore.
But the presumption is that everybody, each and every single individual, is responsible enough to always go what you may perceive a positive direction. What the data actually tells us, it's actually the other way. People are very irresponsible when you leave them on their own. They allow their bodies to erode, and you can extrapolate the logical conclusion from there, is that mostly when you leave people alone, actually they tend to head the wrong way. But I'm all for get them C-cups, girl. You go
I'm here for the bodies to erode. You had me at erode. Go on.
That bikini look.
So I'm curious about this. This is really interesting. Someone said to me, you've got to check out Renee Zellweger because she had an eye lift, and she looks very different now. So, I mean, I found us a picture of her, and let's just take a look at that, because this might give people the idea that there's something worth doing here, or not worth doing, as the case may be. So here's Renee Zellweger before and after, all right? So on the left is before, and on the right is after. You can see she's got a bit older. I mean, that's part of what happens. But I don't think she necessarily looks better or worse. To me, she does look like the same person. It's not very dramatic. I don't know.
It's quite subtle. I don't know. I don't really see a huge difference. It's just like a subtle. She's obviously aged. She still looks good. You know, she's glowing.
Anyway,
and this was just a nice filter.
Let's all just be pleased that Bulelo is not, like, in charge of all of us, because, my God, he has rules and laws, and he would be like Stalin. I really think if the country was run by you, we'd be in a bigger heap of shit than Jacob Zuma.
More Lenin. We'd be so screwed. I'd be more Lenin than Stalin, but yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you. You can take your Leninism and you can shove it up your ass. I'd prefer to live in a country where I can make my own decisions. And Mbulelo is not sitting in the Oval Office or the Union Buildings telling us all what we can and can't do with our own bodies.
Where you can and can't breathe. Yeah. Like, to the left.
Right.
Do not cough near me. To I hell, am Mbulelo. To hell look with, at this yeah. perfect face.
To hell with you, Mbulelo. Who the hell put you in charge? No one. Don't tell me what to do. You want to even if you want to look like absolute shit, you want to have a piercing in every available part of your body and be made more of metal than skin. You do it. Don't listen to Mbulelo. You do you.
Do it. You will deal with my D cups, Mbulelo, for the rest of your life.
Right. There we go. Right. There's nothing you can do about it.
Stay away from my children.
You don't have any because no one will make with you.
You don't know that.
You don't have any
Some
children.
People like rules. That's true, I don't.
You don't?
Well, that you know of.
Well, I mean, we
And Gareth, you're aging now. I don't want to make any age jokes.
Go on. I'm still,
who am I to listen to a man who won't be around much longer?
Forget. Don't forget.
Is that going on the eulogy?
I will be. You know, Mbulelo's going to write my eulogy, and I can't wait to see it. I'm not worried about that. What I'd like to do is just show you a couple of ads from back in the day. And show you how advertising has progressed because this is hilarious. So these are actual ads that used to be printed and published. And it's bloody amazing. Like here's one, for example. She was the perfect wife except for one neglect. So it says she was lovely, she was efficient, she was economical, she was affectionate, she was cheerful, but she was careless about feminine hygiene. This was an actual ad that they used to have out.
Great.
What?
It was feminine hygiene products, so tampons or whatever, and this is how they advertise it. So she was the perfect wife, except for that one thing. And then this one is great. These two men standing on the edge of a mountain, with a woman hanging on by a rope, and it says, "Men are better than women." And it's for it's for these jerseys, these sweaters. And it says men are better than women, and it goes into this whole thing about how indoors women are much much more useful, but outdoors women are useless. That's the whole ad.
They are something of a drag. This is bollocks. Yes. This is nonsense. What did like where who allowed and why are you guys laughing so hard? I'm offended.
This is hilarious.
You can't be this entertained.
It's fantastic. I mean, There's something about all that kind of obvious chauvinism that you just don't see anymore. Now, there's so little actual chauvinism going on in the world, we have to find it. We have to seek it out. We have to, like, look at someone's tweets and try and ascertain and interpret whether or not they're being sexist. Those kind of ads are, like, straight up, this is how sexism looks. And you don't find that easily anymore. I'm just saying it's a good thing that you don't find
Absolutely.
It easily.
But definitely, but because it's 2021.
This should be a reminder to all those people who complain about, like, the world is so unfair for women and women, blah, 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 whatever. Yes, of course, there are still inequalities. Those will always be there because there are going to be differences between men and women until we're all dead and all of our descendants have been dead for thousands of years. But we have progressed. Let's take stock and be pleased about the fact that there aren't actually ads like this coming out. Here's another great ad we should be grateful isn't around anymore. More doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. It's got a picture of a doctor who, in my opinion, doesn't look so fresh. And this is for Camel cigarettes. Isn't that great?
Different time.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. We've come far, man.
Camel cigarette. Here's a good one. Stay fit and slim by taking amphetamine.
Waza. Yeah.
And you can imagine the script, right? You can imagine what it says in the script there. I'm gonna try and interpret it the way I think it goes.
When? There is no need for you to look old and bedraggled if you can look young and slim. And you can look marvelous without having to go and do physical exercise, which we all know is beneath you. So instead, take amphetamine 3 times a day, and you'll slim out beautifully. Your husband will get home and go, "Oh my, Denise, you look so lovely. Have you been exercising?" And you will say to him, "No, I just had a mouthful of amphetamine. Don't worry about me. By the way, the children, have you seen the children?"
Yo, Gareth, you are way too close to this.
That's great, huh? Yeah, I'm telling
that's
you.
That's so good.
All right, here's another ad you won't see anymore today. It's the top of a tin, and it says, cocaine toothache drops, instantaneous cure, price 15 cents, manufactured by the Lloyd Manufacturing Company. For sale by all druggists, registered March 1885. See other side for details.
And it's got, yeah, see other side.
It's got pictures of these two children. They look very happy. They're building a little thing out of sticks. And clearly these children have been taking cocaine tooth drops. And you know what? They don't look so bad for it, if you ask me.
What was happening back then? Yo, what?
Yeah, cocaine tooth drops. So if you've got toothache, just have some cocaine. Perfect.
For the kids, huh?
For the kids. Oh. For the kids. That's the best part. And here, lastly, cure for drunks. There is a cure for alcoholics that has shed its radiance to thousands. And it is, the cure for drunks is tell them to drink more, then hand them Bog's Tawny Port.
What a time.
It's got a picture of the bottle, and there's this old man with one of those handlebar moustaches. And it says, Tawny Cocaine Port. So it was port with cocaine in it. What a marvelous invention this must have been at the time. Imagine the happiness that flowed from a bottle of Tawny Cocaine Port. Imagine all the fun they were having in the late 1800s with Tawny cocaine port, huh? Aren't you?
That's Hemingway's dream. It's would have saved Hemingway so much time.
Aren't you a little jealous that we live in a time where doctors tell us what to do?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have lasted this long. If I was born back then, I would have long perished.
You think so? You would have gone down with a bottle of Tawny's cocaine port.
Those cocaine drops, bro. I would have been a lab rat any day. Like, what? Sure. Okay. What does this do?
100%.
Having said that, have you ever seen Hemingway's day, how it used to go with the amount of narcotics and drinking he used to take?
No, but didn't he died in, what, Jamaica, was it? I think he was in Jamaica, in the Caribbean. But the guy had a great life. I mean, he really did have a lot of fun.
Yeah, give us
an idea of what his schedule was on a daily basis. It must be, because he just wrote, but he probably spent, you know, a 20th of his day writing, the rest of the time drinking and being with friends, and you know,
and on the coke.
That's the way to, and on the coke, yeah.
Or was it Hunter S. Thompson? One of the two had the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen, just like drugs in the morning.
Hunter S. Thompson. And you know what? Frankly, would you rather go down in history like a Hunter S. Thompson? Look, by no means are average old you and me nearly as good at writing as Hemingway and Hunter S. Thompson were. But the two of them really didn't try to put the maximum amount of time on Earth into play. They were more interested in a good time than a long time. And they really lived that to their dying day. Both of them drank, took drugs, slept with numerous women, did crazy things, crazy, crazy things. I mean, Hunter S. Thompson had guns and would go and shoot things. And I mean, he was mad. They fired his remains out of a cannon eventually. That's how
No eulogy there.
Yeah. So, would you rather burn out or fade away? You know, that's the question when you look at people like Hemingway and Thompson.
So quickly, here's Hunter S. Thompson's day. 3 p.m., get up. 3:05, shivers regal with Dunhill. 3:45, cocaine. Another glass of shivers at 3:50. At 4:05, this is p.m., first cup of coffee with a Dunhill. At 4:15, cocaine. At 4:16, orange juice and Dunhill. 4:30, cocaine. 4:54, cocaine. 5:05, cocaine. 5:11, coffee and Dunhills. 5:30, more ice in the shivers. 5:45, cocaine, etc., etc. And then at 6 o'clock, you would have the devil's lettuce, a bit of grass to take off the edge from the day.
Jesus.
and that's just half of the amount of drugs you did in a day, by the way.
That's
he got up
phenomenal.
At 3 p.m.
No. Got up at 3 in the afternoon.
If you're waking up at 3 p.m. already, it's like, what's happening?
Wow.
Yeah. I stand. I have to stand. I have to. Mm.
Yeah.
I don't have the balls. I don't know if any of you do, but we need people like that.
We do.
You know, to try it out, show us that it's not real, and then we can just go forth, you know? Because.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Kanda says, Kanda says, tawny cocaine port and an old school Coca-Cola, please, barman. Yeah, I love it.
There was cocaine in Coca-Cola back then, from what the rumors say.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, I remember that rumor.
It was crazy what was allowed back in the day, says Robin. Elvis used to literally put himself under general anesthetic.
Yep.
So did Michael Jackson not so long ago, except Dr. Conrad Murray did that for him. Oh, it's amazing. It is great that there are people like that who've done these things, because the rest of us we can dwell in between, and we don't have to go to the extremes they went, but we can see what kind of a life they might have had. It's just great. It's just great. I love it.
And now people, I mean, you listen to some of those stories, like people now go, when I go to the gym and I swim, I have to have earplugs in because it's so uncomfortable. Like, that's where we're living now, you know?
Who's that? Tony Robbins, who's that motivational dude who says, Tony Robbins is like, make the best of your life every minute of the day, blah, blah, blah. And then there's Hunter S. Thompson. And who do I think is a cooler human being? I mean, to me, if it's down to Tony Robbins or Hunter S. Thompson, I'm a Hunter S. Thompson man. I've actually got Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas here on my bookshelf somewhere. I must find it. I read that again.
I don't want to get into it, but maybe the most overrated film of all time. It's not the time.
No, the film was shit. Coming on in a bit. No, the film was shit.
Hey, here's the rule, right? Johnny Depp, C-list actor, A-list star. People must always get that right. He's not a good actor, big star. That's what he is. Mm-hmm. Ruined that movie. Great book. C-list actor.
Yes, and actually, he spent quite a lot of time with Hunter S. Thompson, so you would have expected a little more from him, but anyway, I think he gave the eulogy, speaking of completing the circle for this morning, he gave the eulogy at Hunter S. Thompson's funeral. It was hilarious. He told a story about how Jack Nicholson went to stay in a cabin in the woods, and Hunter S. Thompson snuck up there while Jack was sleeping, and put out like animal carcasses and blood and like entrails and huge speakers that he connected to a sound system in his car. And he played he also had fireworks positioned all around the house, and it was all triggered, right? And then what he did is he went and he knocked on Jack's cabin door while Jack was sleeping in there. And obviously Jack Nicholson had had a few drinks and probably a whole lot more. And then Hunter fired off all of this stuff at once, and Jack woke up. And he walked outside and he saw like animal entrails and blood everywhere, like there'd been a massacre, right? And he heard these noises on these speakers, like these monster noises and shit. And he completely shat himself. He ran inside, grabbed a gun, and then Hunter S. Thompson came laughing out of the woods and was like, ha, got you, bastard.
That is brilliant.
Isn't that amazing?
I need friends like that.
No. Just such a great story. Anyway, enough of that. We've got to get moving. We've got someone who I've been waiting to have back on the show for a long time now. Robin Wheeler has just done a book tour of South Africa where he walked around, met people, spoke to people, got some inside info from all kinds of people in the country. And he says he's feeling very optimistic about South Africa and our future. He has some positive messages to share with us. Anytime Robin wants to tell us positive things, I'm happy to see him. And he's here with us this morning. Hey, Robin, how are you?
Morning, Gareth and everyone else.
Yeah, good to see you.
Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, man. Excellent. So, Robin, first of all, how did the book tour go? And tell us, share with us this optimism that you've picked up. We need to hear more.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm not a morning person, so I'm going to be as optimistic as I can, considering the circumstances.
That's all good.
I'm more of a Hunter S. Thompson
wake up at 3 in the
Ernest
afternoon.
Hemingway type. Yeah. It's a bit of the kind of bohemian writer in me.
Right.
And, I'm as sprightly as I can be at this time. But, I've just interestingly enough, with the lockdown, we ended up doing a road trip around the country.
Yes.
With my new books coming out, they were actually due out last year, and I brought them out as a trilogy because there's so many insights books written. I'm just finishing up the 27th one.
Right.
And I'm feeling a bit behind with these, so I'm bringing them out in threes now. And they were due to come out last year, but then the lockdown broke, and that delayed the release. So when they came out now, I planned a road trip around the country. You know, one doesn't get a chance to do that very often, and one must grab the opportunity.
Sure.
So I ended up, client came up in Cape Town, and so drove down 5,500 k's it was in the end, all the way down through the Karoo, down the West Coast, through Amazing. Cape Town, and then up all the way down, up the Garden Route through Transkei into KZN, and got to see a real cross-section of the country geographically and people, and just saw that under the radar of what's going on in the mainstream media, there's a lot of authenticity coming through. People are living the lives that they really want. They've been pressed by circumstance to be more authentic and more true to themselves, and it's like a quiet wave of awakening.
I'm going to stop you there quickly, because there are a couple of things you've said very nonchalantly, which are actually quite a big deal. First of all, 27 books. That's you're not messing around, and you're calling them the handbooks for the new humanity. And we'll get into exactly that's what right. you cover in your books in a moment. But it must have also been nice to do all this traveling and to get out and about in this country while everybody else was more in and staying indoors and not going out and not doing anything. It must have been quite a relief yes. to actually do normal human stuff, right?
It was. I actually said to my companion, you know, the masks, wearing a mask was a small price to pay for being the king and the queen of the world, you know. It was like the whole country was ours, and everywhere was quiet and serene and beautiful, and Cape Town had that amazing moody brooding weather, and all along the coast we had different experiences up to KZN where it was actually quite mild and warm. And just being able to see, to be ourselves, because I'm also, you know, one of the key words that's been my work for 25 years, I started out 25 years ago in March 96 with this vision of for humanity. It was a kind of a burst, an epiphany that I had in my own life, but I realized everyone was going on this journey now of living in this ideal way where you're in tune with yourself, you're bringing your creativity to bear, you're living your purpose, and it's really become mainstream. I mean, you can't scroll a social media feed without seeing the pop culture really speaking this language. So it has been my life's work, and writing these books has been a big part of it. But just interesting that you would think, I say to people, you know, being a healer doesn't mean you're immune. It means that you're actually more sensitive to the issues that you help people with. And so the transformation for me has actually been more intense now than ever. And I'm making all these changes in my own life. And it was really great to get out of my house and get out into the country. And to just see people, you know.
So tell me,
like tour, like a band.
Tell me why you feel optimistic about things, because this is really at the heart of why I wanted to speak to you. You know, we can talk a little bit about the books, and we can talk about your trip, but lots of people go on road trips. We've got so much bad news, Robin, every day being funneled into us by the TV, by the social media environment, by all these government rules and regulations and lockdowns and masks and sanitizers. And people are just not doing what they were doing before to have fun and to be around each other like normal humans in a society. And for many people, there are plenty of reasons to feel pessimistic. So explain to me why you feel good about the way the world is right now, and whether or not this has something about to do with your general philosophy of you know, the new humanity.
Well, it's almost that negativity that brings on the positive. It's almost the oppressive struggle that pushes us deeper into ourselves and gets us in touch with our more authentic and fundamental nature, you know. So it's that that hardship that has actually brought out the best in us. And instead of running around, scurrying around in a state of sort of active hypnosis, people have been forced to do a lot of soul searching and sit with themselves and just be at home in their own space and face themselves in solitude. And then also, you know, reinvent themselves. You know, when all those sort of old doors close, or when the old crumbles, the new has space to come through. So it's almost through that hardship and that suffering that we're able to rise from the ashes of our previous selves, our old selves, you know. So it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy optimism. It's a real one. And that's been my experience in my own life, is whenever I've got to a crossroads, I've had to just you know, you consider everything from a fearful point of view, and then suddenly you realize, okay, fuck it, I'm going to do what I want.
No, I love this. It's a difficult thing to adjust your mind to, because by nature, we prefer being comfortable, safe,
yes,
having a predictable future, making things stay the same for as long as possible. That's how human beings like to operate. But that doesn't bring the best out of us. And
yes,
unless you experience difficulty, and unless you have challenges, and unless you have real responsibilities and hardships, you don't actually improve. You start going backwards. Yes. So yes, you're looking at this from a point of view that most people don't want to look at things. So you're going, oh, what do I have to learn from hardship? Oh, I lost my job, or, you know, I've lost someone in the family or friends to coronavirus, or I've lost my liberties, or whatever it might be that people are pissed off about. And you're saying, no, actually, you should be grateful for these things. They're gifts that you've been given that will help you to develop to the next level.
Brilliantly said. You know, that thing of gratitude is just to be mindfully grateful. Just to, when the first thing you wake up in the morning is just go, let's tune into how grateful I am to be here.
Mm.
And if you're going to embrace the one side of life, you need to embrace the other. To me, the higher consciousness that we're moving into here under duress is signified by being able to hold both polarities at the same time from a place of observation or witnessing. So the higher self, which has also been part of the last 25 years, you know, guys like Eckhart Tolle talking about presence and this kind of thing of being the higher consciousness watching the duality of life. So you would see both and you'd be grateful for both. And I can see in my day, most of my days have the most glorious moments and the most challenging moments. And I just remind myself to embrace both, because just as much as, you know, the good stuff gives you a whole lot, so does the difficult stuff. And so that's the place to use whatever your experiences are, is to access your higher self and to come from that.
Are you seeing this in a lot of people? Because you clearly have identified it in yourself, but have you seen it in others?
Yes, I do see it in people. I see the opposite a lot, which is sometimes difficult to make sense of. Sometimes the signs are so clear, but they generally tend to be sort of graciously clear, you know, when you least expect them. And that's one of the things with the new. I've said to people over the years, you know, if the old doesn't work, if all of the things that you guys have been chatting about in the last sort of hour and a half that I've been listening to, if we've reached such an impasse in so many areas of life, don't try and solve the problems using the existing mindset. You have to acknowledge that the new has the answers, or even if it doesn't, at least give it a chance. And to do that, you need to open to that new, which means suspend the old deliberately and don't keep doing the same thing over and over. And in that gap that opens up, there's a chance for something new to come. And the problem with humanity is, firstly, we're nature. So I joke and I say, you know, a river doesn't wake up in the morning and decide I'm going to take a different route to the sea. It needs a tree to fall or a rock to roll in the way. So we need obstruction, and then we need to go through the sort of resistance and the catharsis. And then from that, you look around and suddenly you've awoken to something new. And that's what we're all going through.
Yeah, I like that. I can see Lebang is nodding her head. She's mostly in agreement with you, I think. But do you feel that way? I mean, a lot of what Robin's saying clearly resonates.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what resonated the most is that, you know, when you get to a place of trying to you know, to make the world a better place, you also are not absorbed of these things. You yourself are also going through things. So I like what you're saying in that change your mindset and stop knocking on a wall hoping for a door to open. We live in a time where it's easy for us to just get engulfed in all the bad and the sucky and the ohs, you know, all this negative, that it's so easy to find ourselves just hopping onto the bandwagon and saying, no, really are. Whereas, you know, what you're saying is you're encouraging us to look at it differently and use that as kind of a foothold and try to change your situation as a result of that. The bad's always going to happen. That's not going to go away. What you're in control of is how you react to that and what you do about that. So I'm absolutely happy that, you know, Gareth Borchi, I'm just sitting here like taking notes, because this is exactly what we needed to hear. We need this constant positive reinforcement. And especially now more than ever, it's too easy to just go with the flow and be a sheep and be like, yeah, it is all bad, hey? We live in the problem so much as a people. We don't spend enough time living in the solution.
And
so kudos.
And Robin, it's true, right, that people love to moan, and it's an easy thing to do, because when you get together with people, the first thing people want to do is complain about stuff. It gives you a sense of, like, all of us have the same problems, and maybe a bit of schadenfreude as well. Whereas it's much harder to get together with people and actually affirm those positive things that are going on in your life.
Right. Yeah, and with that as well, I joke, there's with the release of these new, the new trilogy of books, Wiser Insights, Freer Insights, and Fuller Insights, I've re-released the first six books in the series as well. And when I was doing that, I reread them and wrote for each of them a chapter looking back. And at one point, I realized that when I released Deeper Insights in 2010, I just finished renovating my house, and I created this ideal author's den. And then I'd also gone and discovered Thailand for the first time. It was I fell in love with Thailand. And I joked in the book, in the chapter looking back, that it was a bit like meeting a mistress on the way home from your honeymoon. So I had this ideal home, and then I had this love affair with Thailand. And for the last 10 or 12 years, I lived with this creative tension between the two, and I was trying to resolve it. You know, should I live in South Africa, or should I live in Thailand, or how can I live with both? And then I realized, I looked around and I'd written, you know, 25 books or so in that decade using that creative tension. And so it's not so much just embracing the bad, but also realizing that the interpretation of it as bad is where things get stuck. It's actually being able to see things without judgment, and knowing that there's an intelligence, there's a universal intelligence unfolding that is actually within all of us. If I'm able, perhaps, say, to voice some of it, or all of us are in our own ways, then we all have that wisdom within us. And it's on that, the journey is actually inwards into who we are, and then bringing that to bear through our service to the world, just like you guys are doing here.
Yeah, you've just hinted at something which I've believed for a long time. I can't justify this, and I can't test it under laboratory conditions, but I feel it must be true. This idea that you're never going to reach perfect equilibrium, right? And what made me think of it is your Thailand, South Africa thing. So we're always trying to find entropy. We're trying to find zero energy, which is exactly the opposite of the point of being alive. You've got to keep putting energy in and taking energy out. It's about supply and demand. If you're talking economics, right. It's about love and hate. It's about exercising those emotions at the maximum you're able to, and that means there isn't going to be a point of equilibrium. I know this is hugely philosophical, but I love the way that you explained your best creative output was as a result of the tension between these two places that you loved so much and for different reasons. And the same goes for everything in our lives, our relationships, our health, our money, the reason that we enjoy our work or we don't. These are things that matter. And I like the fact that we've got to come to a point where we are happy to have a lack of balance. As long as you realize that lack of balance will eventually reset the opposite way at some point, and you're going to be in constant flux, then you can move on with your life. You can get ahead.
Yeah. And it's not purely sorry, Robin. It's not purely philosophical, because actually, so in chemistry, we talk of a catabolic state. And I mean, the worst type of scientist called biologists is, without a catabolic state, you will not have life. It is not possible. Yeah. There must be, in the very truest sense, the death of cells for life to actually happen. You cannot have life without a catabolic state constantly being the norm. So it's not purely philosophical. It is real, right down to the molecular level, beyond just the pathological, you know? So it's awesome stuff, Robin. Awesome
stuff. Thanks. It's basic science. And I think whichever angle you come at it, from, you're going to see the same thing. I think that's where spirituality and science are speaking the same language. All of us are finding a way to integrate the two. And just to use my very limited knowledge of science, and what I've experienced in 96, well, in 95, when I was in the corporate world, I studied psychology before that and during that time, which was kind of the self, knowing the self and knowing people. And then I worked in corporate HR, and that was about work and the future of work and performance. And then I had this epiphany, and I was grappling in the mid-90s with this thing. Why am I in South Africa? You know, because I was born in London. My South African parents married and went to London. And so they could have stayed there. And then I had the army to contend with back then. And I had this burning sort of discord of like, why South Africa? You know, and I suddenly realized my question was my answer, because I'm meant to be here. And this is the place that has a transformation happening. So back then, it was a political and social thing.
Yeah.
And the Mandela brand was starting to really peak. And everyone in the world saw South Africa as a global brand. And I realized that we are transforming here in ways that the rest of the world is still coming to terms with, or maybe paying lip service to. I saw it in human resources consulting circles and business circles. Everywhere else would start, you know, the annual conference would change its theme. But in South Africa, we really lived it. So this thing of, say, unemployment, you know, where it's just an election issue in some countries, in South Africa, it's a fundamental structural and social issue where people have to make different plans for themselves. And so in that way, we actually global leaders. We just needed in the last 25 years to come to terms with that. And so South Africa to me has a global brand. And if you look at how people are really, I mean, Elon Musk, for example, he's not very strongly associated with South Africa, but his very roots, everything he's creating at such an amazing level, it all comes from here, you know. And so what I've seen, if I can make a second point quickly, because I'm really saying a few things
no,
here.
No, go ahead.
What I realized is I went through this epiphany of my own, and I was like so excited about the future, and the books were the Celestine Prophecy and Conversations with God and, you know, the power of now and this kind of awakening and the millennium and this, you know, again, there was the fear of Y2K. And then it was like from about 2000 until 2020, it was almost like, and I'm going to use my basic knowledge of physics and science. If you take a pot of water and you heat it on the stove and you plot the amount of heat you put in on the x-axis and the temperature rise on the right, on the y-axis, you'll get a gradient of one. So the more heat you put in, the more the temperature goes up until you reach 100 degrees if you're talking at sea level. See, I'm showing off. I did pay attention in standard
impressive,
seven.
Highly impressive, Robin.
Thanks. But what happens when you reach that 100-degree point is that the pot continues absorbing energy, but the temperature doesn't go up. And I realized looking back with this, the last 18 months, was that we were in this state of gathering energy, and we were living in an unsustainable way that we knew that the planet couldn't carry on this way, but there didn't seem to be any change. And then suddenly there's been this quantum leap or this phase change, and all of that energy that's built up is exploding. And we're really in a place now where none of the rules actually apply. And if you're clutching at anything old, you're going to get hurt. But if you let go, it's a bit like, you know, if you talk about these guys taking all these drugs and drinking hard. And it's a bit like if you take psychedelics and everyone's been into ayahuasca in the last years and you've got to surrender through that resistance. You've got to almost a purge, and then the awakening is there.
You can, but there are also lots of people who cling on, and they feel that the world is crumbling around them because it's unfamiliar and they're not comfortable with change. Really, they only make themselves extremely unhappy, because there are some things that you can do nothing about. I mean, we often in our most enthusiastic and self-absorbed states, we start thinking we can change the world. And, you know, I'm going to run for president, or I'm going to make sure that I speak out about all the stuff that's happening around me. Actually, you know, you're a drop in the ocean. And in some ways, that humility that comes with that is the best place to be. Yeah. In other ways, you can adapt to the surroundings like humans have for thousands of years and make your life less fractious and difficult and angry and frustrating if you just surrender to some of this shit. Sometimes it's not worth putting up a fight every time. Some wars are not worth winning.
Well, I'm, you know, as I said earlier, I'm actually you know, I'm sitting here this morning and warming up as we go, but you know, I speak here in a voice of, say, somebody who helps other people or maybe is an authority on what I do, but what qualifies me to perhaps do that is just being in alignment with a higher intelligence, which behind the scenes I have to go through untold anguish to be able to do. So that thing of going through turmoil doesn't mean you're wrong. It means that you're going into the new, you're doing the right thing. And it's actually mastery over that struggle that that brings wisdom. Or, and you know, you talk about becoming the president. I think that's very much an old model of things, that to be of influence, you have to do structural things. Yeah. I actually think, you know, the president, if you look at the American president at the moment, I mean, it's become so absurd that actually it's giving people a chance to look through the obvious. And the president is not the most powerful person. They are absolutely controlled by the system that they've submitted themselves to in order to be that president. It's the Hunter S. Thompson. It's the bohemian. It's the Ernest Hemingway. That's the person that can have the most influence. And that can be done in a very quiet way. Or nowadays, you can reach billions of people just from a little spot down on the beach, you know. Yeah,
that's
and when
true.
We were traveling the country, the harder lockdown broke on the Monday morning from the Sunday night halfway through. And we went to our usual breakfast spot and the tables were all folded up. So as we traveled, we ate food in the front seat of the car and on benches on the beach. And that's where the most profound moments come. So don't stick with the old mindset and try and do things that way. Open up to the sunshine and all the answers are right here.
Absolutely. I love this. Just before spring, this is exactly what I think a lot of people need to hear. I love it, Robin. I mean, I'm a pragmatist and I'm cynical about this kind of stuff, but you've done amazing work in this respect. And, you know, if anybody wants to know Wiser Insights, Freer Insights, Fuller Insights, these are some of the books, the first six, which you're re-releasing.
Thanks, Gary.
And then your new books, which are going to be out now. Are they already available?
Yes, they're available. And let me tell you quickly about those Wiser Insights, as you can see there. That was actually written in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
But publishing books is a business and writing books is a creative endeavor. So the written ones were building up. I was writing one or two or three a year. And so Wiser Insights was actually written back then. And then Freer and Fuller were written in 2019. So each book is a sort of it's an arc of its own. And so Wiser Insights, I was actually renovating my house at the time. So there's transformation in there, this whole thing of breaking down the old and creating the new.
Mm-hmm.
And then now when I put them out, I'm actually selling that house and moving on from it, which is even more disruptive.
Yeah.
Just do your writing, you know, just write. This thing of journaling is brilliant. That's how my books are basically written. I just write in the moment and connect with people. And people tell me they read the books over and over again. They, you know, if you read information, you read it once. The second time it's boring. But if you're having insight, which is what the books are all based on, it keeps stimulating you to go deeper into your true self and awakening your ability to engage with life meaningfully and creatively. So people read them over and over again. And they're like a meditation. They just bring you into your own intelligence.
Well, listen, I mean, the takeaway for me is don't look at all the things that are going on around us in the world as being reasons to feel sad and sorry for yourself and complain about how things were going to change anyway. The fact that they've happened so dramatically creates opportunity for us. And if you're going to moan about that, then moan somewhere else.
Or just, you know, process the grief. It's very real. Have a good cry, even if it takes a few days or a few weeks, and really, really feel. You know, you can't experience heights of joy beyond the depths of sadness that you allow. You know, both polarities happen in the context of your awareness and your openness. So, in order to live at a higher level, you have to go to a deeper level as well. And that's the spiritual journey. It's not so much about, you guys have got a great platform here, and I just want to commend you, Gareth, on what you've done and what you're doing and your voice in South Africa, both as a literal voice as you speak, but your business, the way you've broken away from radio and took that risk when you were at the zenith of your career, you know, that's the kind of courage that's needed, and you've created something new, and you really do speak to and for us in a very – if you weren't here, put it that way, the gap would be tremendously felt. And really, everyone needs to do what you're doing.
Well, all right. Thanks, Robin. I mean, that's not why I brought you
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
There we go. Thanks. All right. Very nice to have you on. And thank you for talking to us this morning. Keep doing the good work you're doing.
Guys.
And lots and lots of reasons to read Robin's books, among other things. Robin Wheeler. Yeah, I mean, listen, some people need to hear these things. You need to hear them a little bit more than you think you do, because repetition puts it in your brain. we always say, oh, you know, it's so hard, and oh, there are lockdowns, and oh, this, and oh, this is bad, and that's dangerous, and this is shit, and blah, whatever. We get it. We get wrapped up in this negativity, and it does nothing good for us. Nothing.
Yeah.
The Japanese have a brilliant way of speaking about this from way, way back. Is the saying is, the pain is inevitable, but the suffering at some stage becomes a choice. So it's not always that the pain is inevitable. The pain of life is inevitable. Suffering is a choice.
I love that. That's great. I'm actually going to be speaking about a bit of spirituality on my new show tomorrow.
Okay, so
Namaste.
Let me make a proper
throwing it in there.
Here's a proper announcement for that, because we can't just have you drop that in at the last minute as if it's you know, it's not breaking news. So here it is, everybody.
Yeah.
Breaking news. All right, so Lebang is going to be joining CliffCentral.com, and she's going to have her own show on a Thursday, and she will tell you more about that in a minute, but she's going to be doing lots of other cool stuff with us too, so stick around to see what she's up to. And it's fortuitous that she's come into our lives at this time and that we've come into hers, so let's have some fun together. Just tell us what you're going to be doing on your show.
Okay, cool. So I'm obviously going to be just covering a range of topics. The show is called Life with Lebang. I'm a very layered person, so I want to just open myself up and allow you into my world. So I'm going to be covering parenting, being a young parent, having a bunch of children. I'm going to be covering spirituality. I think it's fate that we had Robin on this morning, because a big part of my show is the healing part of life, the good, the positive, you know, not just healing from a physical or emotional aspect, but spiritually, and soul searching and self-love and a range of those things. Also want to touch a little bit on human interaction. So when I say relationships, I don't just mean romantic, peopleships, cousins, brothers, sisters, parenting. So Life with Lebang, I'm just unpacking myself. I want you to unpack with me. I want to invite you into my life, and while inviting you into my life, invite me into your life. Let's connect. Let's bond. Let's use this platform to make the world a better place, as Gareth said. You know, let's have a lot of fun while we're at it. But beyond that, let's live in the solutions of things. I just want it to be great. I want it to be impactful. And I'm really, really excited to have my first show tomorrow between 11 and 12. But of course, podcast vibes, whenever you're ready to listen, right, just click. And I'll be right there with you. So thank awesome. You, Gareth. And awesome. Thank you that I was able to send that email, because, hey, look where we are.
Yeah,
thanks,
you see,
guys.
Timing is everything as well. So don't go. I don't want everyone listening now to send me emails and say they want to do a show, because I'm not interested. But some people break through the noise, and you did that.
Yeah.
So let's break through some more noise with Lebang, and we'll check out her show tomorrow. That's at 11. And then obviously that's if you want to be a part of it live. But if you want to listen on podcast, you can do that too. Awesome, awesome stuff.
Yes.
Speaking of shows, the MKT show, Cliff Central Sport, is on later on today. And you don't want to miss that with Bulelo. He's holding a crystal. What are you doing?
Is that a crystal, Bulelo? What's happening?
Yeah. Well, I'm embracing the new show.
You son of a bitch. I think he's being rude.
Whilst holding a rock. Okay, bring it.
Yeah, no, this is, it's got a special energy.
Oh, God, no, and, here we go. This is bad. All right.
Peace, let him have this moment. Mm-hmm.
All right, Bulelo, go on, say it. I want to hear now.
Well, this has a warmth that, I mean, as we come together, and the energy of the room can only be cleaned by this rock here. So I look forward to you bringing your energy, Sister Al. That's how spiritual people talk.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, Lilo, you're not very convincing at this crystal healing shit. So I think you rather
stick
to
what you do.
Welcome,
Lebang.
Yeah, stick to what you do.
No, Lebang, you are an awesome addition. And on a very serious note, welcome. You're an awesome, awesome addition. And I think everyone here is super lucky to have you. And, yeah, Gareth, shout out.
That's cool.
And I think, Gareth, you should also learn to take compliments. I saw how uncomfortable you were with what...
No, shut up, Mbulelo. The show's
Robin.
Finished.
What, Robin? Yeah,
all right, thanks, everyone.
Robin,
great show this morning.
Right.
Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.
Yeah. CliffCentral.com.